This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. Have you made your love life the focus of your 2017 resolutions by any chance? Well, like many resolutions, ones about love can be unrealistic and may set us up to be a little disappointed. But whether you want to find the love of your life or spice up your current relationship, it's important to set realistic goals that will really give you a feeling of success. My guest today, Dr. Holly Parker, is a psychologist and author who also teaches the Harvard University course, The Psychology of Close Relationships. Dr. Parker's here, and she's going to talk to us about why setting relationship goals is vital and how we can make sure that we're setting realistic goals that will fulfill and enrich our relationships. Dr. Holly Parker, welcome to the show. I'm so honored to have you with us this morning.
Oh, Erica, it's a real pleasure. Thank you. The honor is all mine, and I hope that you and your listeners are having a beautiful start to the year.
Yes, I know. Well, I definitely am. I definitely am. And you know what's interesting? Yeah, I got engaged in December, and so this is a really interesting time that we're, you know, you and I are talking about this right after the new year. But it's
Congratulations! Can I just tell you? I'm so excited for you. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting. And you know, I think a lot of us, as since we've been very young, little boys and little girls, and we all see this in movies. It's probably one of the first images that we ever are kind of we're kind of subjected to is what is our love life going to look like in the future, and you know, whether that is like the happy ending from the princess fairy tales or whether it's, you know, a lot of these you know, comic book action movies. I mean, no matter what it was, is I think all of us have had these preconceptions of what our love lives are going to look like. So I just wanted to kind of get your sense of how you started in this field and tell me a little bit about where your passion came from in helping people cultivate more enriching relationships.
You know, I, for me, really coming into this field, you know, it's my motivation really was wanting to help people as much as I possibly could. You know, and it's something that for me, you know, I believe it's so important to do what you can to try to leave the world a better place than you found it. And you can do that, mm-hmm. You know, on a grand scale, you can do that person by person, and no matter what, the impact is palpable. And I love, you know, really exploring the human condition and walking alongside people on this beautiful, crazy path that is life, mm-hmm. and, you know, finding ways to elevate it. And for me, I believe very strongly, and the science certainly supports this, that relationships are the cornerstone of a life well lived. I mean, mm-hmm. we as humans, we are made to be social. We evolved from social creatures. Our ancestors were social. If you were ostracized from the group, you died. And mm-hmm. You know, infants don't thrive as well if they don't have connection. Mm-hmm. You know, baby monkeys don't thrive as well if they don't have connection. I mean, you know, we are made to be connected. And, you know, I really believe that there are two important areas of focus when we think about relationships, mm-hmm. and they're different. There's what happens when relationships are going well and how to make that happen. And then there's what do you do when relationships are falling apart. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very natural for people to believe that they are, you know, really two sides of the same coin, but they actually are different. The mm-hmm. absence of negative does not mean the presence of positive. And so these really are two fundamentally different questions. And I'm passionate about both in giving people information that they can use to decrease the negativity in their relationships and build connection and forge joy, really, in their lives with people.
And do you think that the forging joy and kind of setting that foundation in relationships is like routine or habitual? Like, do you have to create that just like you would for your own self-care, like the self-care of a relationship?
Thank you for asking that.
Yeah. No, because I've just...
It's a magnificent question, because what the first thing it brings up for me is the idea that a lot of people have, and I understand why people have this idea. It's that relationships are hard work, right? And you hear people say that. I mean, usually there's weight in their voice too. Like, ugh, relationships are hard, you know? And and the way that they say it, it's like, oh, that doesn't sound like fun at all, right? But actually, what I like to do is challenge people on that and invite them to think about it in a different way. Relationships aren't hard work, but they do require effort, like anything that we're passionate about. And to take the mystery out of it, I ask people to think about other things, like think about any hobby that you really love, any personal goal that you set for yourself, right, or self-care, anything that you really strive toward that means something to you, you put effort into it, and relationships are the same way. You know, they can't be on autopilot, you know, that it involves conscientious effort. And when conscientious effort is placed, the result, you know, when you find that right person, the result can really be wondrous, and it is. And it can be long-lasting, too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Why I asked that question about, like, you know, is about creating these kind of relationship habits is more than the lines of emotional, like, positive regard. Like, if you start a relationship kind of with that base as, I'm going to try and speak as lovingly to you as possible, even if I am, you know, upset about something or I am annoyed with something, and kind of setting that tone. And then the two of you, whether that's a conscious conversation you have, or just it becomes a subconscious kind of energy between the two of you, is that's the way we speak to each other. And then sometimes I see people come in my office that start the relationships with kind of already nagging at each other, criticizing each other from the get-go. And I think that, from what I've seen, has become more of a habit for them. And that's the way they talk to each other. And then that usually leads to some resentment and negativity and doesn't last long. So that's why I was kind of asking is kind of how you work with clients and helping them try to get on that positive. I would think a positive regard for one another is more healthy than, you know, picking at each other.
Well, definitely. Well, you know what's interesting? There's so many fascinating layers to that, too, because you know, sometimes what happens is people, I mean, I think that maintaining love habits, it happens in both ways. It happens between two people. It can happen consciously, talking about, you know, two people talking about what they want their relationship culture to look like. Couples are great about talking about a lot of different things, but one of the things that research shows they are most wary of talking about is their relationship, is intimacy. And so for people to, you know, talk about, okay, what do we want our couple culture to look like? That's something you can forge between two people, talking about it in a very explicit way. You know, I always say the best communication is the least creative. So when one person, you know, if one person asks their partner, what is it, you know, what is it that you want our relationship to look like? That is a powerful question. And people will learn some things that surprise them. But what's really neat is that we can also cultivate a relationship culture based on how we think about our partner. And there's ample evidence that how we think about our partner, how we think about the relationship, even, you know, how we feel about ourselves can impact our behavior toward our partner in all of these ways that we don't even realize. And so I really think it's both. And people can find themselves sliding from a place of being very loving to a place that's not as loving without even realizing it. You know, sometimes, you know, people don't always make conscious decisions in their relationships, and it's actually a wonderful thing if they do. But then the other part, when people nag or when, you know, when people say, God, like, you know, you don't talk to me. I feel like I can't reach you. Oftentimes that, I mean, yes, it can come from being exasperated and frustrated, but it also comes from, I think, oftentimes this very well-intentioned place of trying to show the partner, hey, what you're doing isn't working. I need you to do something different. And the sad thing is, you know, you'd think on the surface of it that, well, if we ask our partner repeatedly, then they do something different, right? But oftentimes the more that we nag, or the more that we, you know, tell someone, well, you know, you're not being a good partner, right, because I can't talk to you, the more that we make those kinds of comments, the more that we wind up actually pushing our partner away and getting the opposite of what we want.
Right. Absolutely. You know. And I love that you said and that you've referred to this as, you know, having it sounds like having a good relationship with yourself will only, you know, equate to the relationship being better. Because like you said, if somebody's having an issue with their own, let's say, self-esteem at work, or they're, you know, feeling like their lifestyle or their health is not doing great, that those things bleed sometimes into a relationship. So it sounds like, too, that we always have to be really mindful of taking care of ourselves first and foremost in order for the relationship to kind of be vibrating at a higher level as well.
We absolutely do. I mean, if there's research showing that when couples don't get enough sleep, right, that they're more apt to, you know, that they're more apt to relate to each other in a less constructive way. And when we're not compassionate to ourselves, you know, if we're unkind to ourselves, if we're out of tune with ourselves, if we, you know, talk about ourselves. You know, it's really based on kind of, you know, Kristen Neff's concept of compassion. If we kind of separate ourselves off, you know, and thinking that our problems are ours alone and we feel isolated in them, then that is more apt to affect the relationship. But on the flip side, if we talk to ourselves, you know, in a more kind way, in this kind of way that we would talk to a friend, if we try to stay attuned to our feelings and don't judge what it is that we're feeling, if we kind of place our struggles and our foibles in the larger human picture, then that predicts greater warmth toward our partner. You know, we're apt to be, you know, what's called more autonomy granting, where we, you know, give our partner more space. You know, overall, it winds up equating to a better relationship. And, you know, the more that we feel good about ourselves, the more apt we are to be able to let someone in.
Right, you know, absolutely.
If we feel like we're a good place to be, then we'll feel more comfortable letting someone else in too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So how do we build into, so I know you've talked about this, you've wrote about this, we'll get it, we'll discuss your books very, very shortly. Just one more question about this. But
sure.
So how do you build intimacy? I mean, I know you've talked about that with, you know, maybe someone who's a little bit more emotionally unavailable, but even if someone is available and in any kind of, you know, relationship, wherever you're at, whether it's the beginning of one, you know, you're newly engaged or you're in it 10 years or 20 years or 5 years, how do we begin to understand that is a tool and a skill, and any recommendations you have to build intimacy?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think one thing that I emphasize to people whenever I'm talking about relationships is that the development of intimacy, the cultivation of the relationship, never stops. It is a lifelong process. And sometimes, you know, people can make the objection of, well, but wait a second, you know, I my partner and I, you know, we're already together. We already know a lot about each other. I know everything there is to know about my partner. How can I possibly get closer? And actually, we humans are infinite onions. You know, we have infinite layers, and there is always the possibility of greater connection and greater enjoyment in relationships. So I think some things for people to think about, and there are two ways that we can do this. One is really what we do in our heads. Again, kind of how we think about ourselves, how we think about our partner in the relationship. That's something that I really emphasize with people. And then also what we do in the space that lives between us and our partner, how we treat our partners. So some examples of things that we can think about. One, and this actually goes to a word that you used at the beginning of the conversation, goals. If we think about approach goals, there's a difference. People can have approach goals or avoidance goals, and we can actually go to either one. So if we have approach goals, I think of those a lot like the carrot that's dangling out on the stick in front of you in a relationship. It's about what you're moving toward. It's the question of how can I be a better partner? How can I bring my partner greater happiness, greater comfort? How can I really show my partner that he or she is loved? How can I make him or her laugh? That's different than avoidance goals where, you know, they're not so much carrots on his sticks as they are potholes that we're trying to move around, right? So this is more negatively tinged. It's more cautious. We're thinking more about, what if I do this and my partner rejects me or my partner judges me or, you know,
fear.
I go
it's like
down.
Fear-based.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's fear-based. And in that case, we're actually not, we're not focused on how to make the relationship better. We're just focused on making it worse. And sadly, what the research suggests is that relationships do decline if we operate from an avoidance goal perspective. So, you know, really, I invite people to think about what they want to create in the relationship, to look forward and think about the partner they most want to be, and then do things to try to move themselves in that direction. Another thing would be gratitude, really taking time to appreciate our partner. This has a huge impact on how we treat our partner, you know, and it's something that we can do by, we can thank our partner certainly, but also we can reflect on what we love and value in our partner. We can savor those moments with our partner and appreciate them. And we can really, in our mind, we can change them from being seemingly ordinary to really recognizing just how extraordinary those moments are. You know, because this is the person that, you know, you love most in the whole world, or one of the people you love most in the whole world. So to really, really cherish that. When we do that, that actually predicts our partner's happiness. Not the gratitude that we share, mind you, but what's up in our heads, which is pretty extraordinary. So those are a couple things to think about. And then a couple of things to do. One would be really offering tokens of love and commitment. People are more apt to get closer when they know that they're safe. And safety is something that is ongoing in a relationship. It's something that we show our partner. So if we do things like text our partner in the middle of the day and let him or her know that we're thinking of them, or we tell our partner how happy we are that we met them, that goes a long way. And, you know, for example, I have a dear friend whose husband gave her a card for their 5-year anniversary. And he told her in the card that he would marry her all over again. Aww. And she was absolutely beaming. It made her year when he told her that. And so, you know, we tend to think that, well, you know, my partner knows. You know, they know I love them, right? I mean, I don't need to show them. Actually, that's not true. You know, it makes a huge difference. And so when people show their partner that they're committed, their partner actually sees that and becomes more committed too. And then guess what the partner does? Partner shows us more commitment. So it's this beautiful snowball that keeps churning. And then another thing that people can do that, that especially as couples over time, they're more apt to overlook, is self-disclosure. This is a wonderful tool. It forecasts marital happiness. When couples hang out together and they talk about themselves and they self-disclose, that actually predicts greater passion and intimacy in the relationship. And, you know, again, that's also self-disclosure is something that people don't always think about, because they think, well, I already know all there is to know about my partner. And I never get tired of reminding people that you never know all there is to know. And so ask questions, you know, ask your partner about him or herself, you know, share information about yourself. You know, what are your dreams? What are your hopes? How did your day go? You know, give details to your partner. How are you feeling? And those are some powerful ways that that couples, when it's practiced on a regular basis, they can become a lot closer.
And when you say self-disclosure, are you referring to just, you know, not necessarily secrets, but maybe stories from your past, or your wounds or fears or feelings of inadequacy or something that creates obviously a moment of you feeling vulnerable, and also a risk that you will be judged. And then maybe when you're not judged in the way that you were maybe hesitant to initially disclose about, yeah. and you're actually loved through that, that maybe, I mean, obviously would create a feeling of intimacy and closeness that you maybe hadn't imagined.
You know what? Self-disclosure, it could be all along the spectrum, as long as it's something okay. that your partner doesn't know. So self-disclosure can be easier, it can be less risky, or it could be more risky. Definitely as we get to know people more, you know, we turn up the dial on the nature of what we share, and so the risk tends to go up. But but couples can bond over things that are risky. They can also bond over things that aren't. So, example, even like I love weird questions, like kind of weird hypothetical yeah. questions. So, for example, if you could be any fruit, what would you be and why, right? So kind of people talking about that, even something that's more playful and fun, then actually in questions like that, you're really combining a two-for-one, because not only do you have self-disclosure, but you also have playfulness and right. laughter. And when couples laugh together, for example, if they think about a memory they shared together that was funny and they laugh about it, they get a relationship boost.
Right.
So, laughter, playfulness, being open, really, if we think about how best friends relate, best
right.
friends self-disclose. Best friends are yeah. playful, and they, they do fun things, or at least they tend to. They have a lot of positivity. They have a high ratio of positivity to negativity, a lot less uh-huh. negativity and a lot more positivity. And,
right.
John Gottman in his research has actually found that for couples to thrive, they need a ratio of positivity to negativity that's 5-1, which means mm-hmm. 5 positive interactions and moments for every 1 negative, because the negative stuff weighs pretty heavily. So if yeah. we can really find ways to open up about ourselves, to let our partner see us more, and to have fun while we're mm-hmm. doing it, and let our partner know that they're loved and appreciate him or her, long-lasting romantic passion is not something that's built through grand romantic gestures. It's in
right.
the details. The angels
it's in
the
details.
Details.
Right, and every day it sounds like it's part of that recipe, which sounds like something that we can all really strive for. And like you said, with what's so interesting about, when you're younger and you're a teenager and you have your best friends who become like your family, you attune to your peers in that way. And, as you were speaking, I was imagining me and my best friend when we were younger, and how I would just so look forward to her company, because I knew we would laugh and have fun and made each other feel like we were the best people in the world. And why is that, as adults, we get into these romantic relationships, not all of us, but tend to not see our partners in that light for whatever reason? Like, we become so subjectively critical at times, or maybe so insecure with ourselves or insecure with the relationship, that we're on guard instead of being totally open and full of light. It's so interesting.
It really is. And in fact, it's absolutely something that doesn't have to be the case. In fact, when people talk about their romantic relationship, I mean, they often will kind of mentally separate off the idea of a romantic partnership from a best friendship. But really, I emphasize this to people over and over, that if you really look at different kinds of relationships, for the sake of our conversation, if we're talking about friendships and romantic relationships, they are vastly more similar than mm-hmm. different. But I think romantic relationships culturally wind up getting set apart somehow in our minds. Mm-hmm. They wind up being treated as this separate animal, as if the
right.
things that make romantic relationships wonderful are separate mm-hmm. from friendships. And it's like, people know how to be good friends. People know how to be good to their friends and what keeps their friends around. But it's almost like when we separate off, when we separate off the idea of a romantic partnership, it's like we, you know, somehow we treat them differently and we imagine that the same rules don't apply, when in fact they really do.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Dr. Parker, Dr. Holly Parker. So you, some people call you Dr. Holly.
Oh,
some
they're
people call
welcome
you Dr.
To,
Parker.
Yeah. Both work.
I just want to quickly before unfortunately our time runs out, and I would love to have you back again. I want to
I'd love that.
Can you tell us a little bit just quickly about the title of your new book and where they can find you and how to get a hold of you and follow you?
Absolutely. So the title of my book is If We're Together, Why Do I Feel So Alone? How to Build Intimacy with an Emotionally Unavailable Partner, and it's through New American Library, and listeners are welcome to get in touch with me on my website, and that is drhollyparker.com. They can also follow me on Twitter, at Dr. Holly Parker, and I'm also on Instagram at Dr. Holly Parker, so I would love to hear
That's
from your
great.
Listeners, and it was such a pleasure to talk with you, and just congratulations on your engagement. I wish you the best,
thank you.
And I wish your listeners the best of luck in their relationships.
Oh, well, thank you so much for all of your insight and your thoughtfulness and guidance today. And definitely please follow Dr. Holly Parker. I will, absolutely, on social media. And I'm really excited to read your book and to, you know, hopefully have you back on so we could discuss everything a little bit further, because there's more to discuss. For sure.
Thank you. The honor would be all mine, and I'm going to be following you too. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thanks so much. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman, and thank you all for joining me today, and stay well.